Today on the show, I'm still in Japan having the time of my life, so I'm answering your questions until I get back. All that and more on 20th Century Boy. Call now for your chance to win $1 million cash. Terms and conditions apply. There is no $1 million cash prize. Welcome to 20th Century Boy. My name is Osaka Mike, and this is the inside of my mind. Welcome back to the show. This is 20th Century Boy by me, Radio Mike, who is currently in Osaka, and every week on the show I start with a different name. And actually, little detour on the different names at the start of the show. Quickly, though, 20th Century Boy, the conversations you wish you were having about the stuff that no one else cares about. One-sided weekly conversation with me, Radio Mike, your pal from Melbourne, Australia. You know, just me and you chatting, but you can't chat back. But you can if you write into the show, you know, radiomikepod@gmail.com, send me an email, or just DM me on Instagram, or DM the show page at TCBpod on Instagram, or, you know, whatever. Comment somewhere. I'll probably see it. Quick, on the name thing, because basically I've never, like, if you've been listening for a while, almost since the day this show started, I've done like a slightly different name at the top of each show. And for a while, like, they were like themed to RM, like Romeo MacGuffin, because Radio Mike, right? Then there was, then they just started becoming Mike puns for a bit. Mike Chemical Romance, Mike Fair Lady, Mike Neighbor Totoro. You know, lots of just Mike puns, which were fun. Then, like, now they're just getting tough, and sometimes you guys send them in and they're very helpful. But now what I realized is I've done, since I can remember, and I don't know when this actually started, but, and it was, I don't even know if it was intentional, but every time I do an Instagram grid post, like a photo, and this has been since before I worked in this industry, before I even was Radio Mike, I would just hashtag it. Like, say it was a picture of me at the zoo, I would do a caption and then I'd do hashtag zoo Mike, right? And it was just like this random fun thing I did. I never even thought about it, but I've just always done it. And it feels like that, like, people know me as that guy. Like, when I do hashtag, you know, Zoo Mike, hashtag Beach Mike, or hashtag Japan Mike, or whatever. It feels like people get around that and they comment like other Mike. So now I'm just, honestly, the name at the start of the show thing, it's just from now on going to be like something relevant to that week, Mike. It doesn't have to be a pun. It doesn't have to be RM themed. It's just going to be something Mike. I don't care. That just makes it easier for me when I'm planning the show. So Osaka Mike, because right now, here's a little time travel craziness. You're listening to this and it's like the end of April, but I'm recording this 2 weeks ago. How crazy is that, right? If you listened to last week, yeah, I've been pre-recording because I'm currently on holidays in Japan, but, you know, I wanted to get a bunch of content out for you guys still rolling out while I'm there. And when I was in Europe last year, I did a bunch of bulk episodes and they went, like, I thought they were really fun and the content was good. So yeah, just keeps the podcast rolling out while I'm away. I wanted to get straight into it this week, I think, with some of the listener questions that have come in, and I appreciate everyone who's sent in questions. That's been awesome. This one, sometimes like people send in similar questions or questions with similar themes that kind of get my brain spinning and thinking about stuff. So this came in from Radio Sean and also from Radio Dolphin Pants, probably not his real name. Sean, they're two different people. Sean's name probably is Sean. Dolphin Pants' name probably isn't Dolphin Pants, but they're kind of in a similar world. Sean asked, what are some of the struggles of solo podcasting? Personally, I find it easier to bounce off a co-host. And Dolphin Pants also asked, are there any podcasts you would like to be a guest on? And And are there any episodes of the podcast you look back on more fondly than others? Now, all interesting stuff. And it got me reflecting because, like, you know, we're nearly mid-year. The time just gets away. The time disappears. It's nearly May. May's the 5th of 12 months. That's nearly 50%. So we're nearly halfway through 2024, which is just absolutely crazy. And I thought I'd just do a reflection, on podcasting, on my career, on what I've been doing, and just sort of talk about that. And these questions, like, are really great to sort of start with, particularly the question on solo podcasting, because right now I leave for Japan when I'm recording this. When you're listening, I'm in Japan. When I'm recording this, you know, get it in your head. I'm recording this and I'm leaving in 6 days. And in the next 6 days, here's a bunch of stuff that I have to do. So, well, last week I recorded 2 episodes of Harry Potter and the Boys with Sam and last week's episode. Today I'm recording this episode that you're hearing and the episode you'll hear next week. And then Wednesday I'm recording 2 more episodes of Harry Potter and the Boys. Tomorrow, Tuesday, I'm recording this week's episode of 20th Century Boy. Not this week for you, this week for me. Which is crazy timeline-wise. At the same time, I want to get a bunch of short-form content done for TikTok and stuff that can just roll out while I'm away and just schedule and put up. And then on Thursday, I'm producing a freelance podcast I work on, but I'm also recording Movie Club and Pat and Mike with Pat. So what's that? I've got to record 7 podcasts this week, which is crazy. And then I think I did this tweet and I thought it was interesting the response I got. I did this tweet recently, or this exit, where I'll just read it out for you because this kind of goes hand in hand with the question that Sean has asked about solo podcasting. So I did a tweet and it is as follows. What people think podcasting is: sit down with some mates and push record. What podcasting actually is: planning the show, setting up recording equipment, managing files and data, filming the show, editing video and audio, uploading the podcast, episode titles and descriptions, social media clips and marketing, managing sponsors, Patreon and bonus content, listener interaction and fostering community, more. So that's just an interesting thought starter, because I think, and I, a few months ago, probably toward the end of last year, I did this bonus podcast on this feed that was just like reflections on my 5 years as an independent podcaster. Go and listen to that. I'm not going to retread on much of that, but someone also asked me, what advice do you have for someone starting a podcast? And I said, hey, listen to this. But the short kind of form of that is that in my time of doing this podcast, which hasn't had a perfect run, there's been times where I've just taken weeks off because I've just been, you know, sick or too busy or whatever. But in the time I've done this podcast, I've seen so many podcasts come and go. Just podcasts pop up, 7 episodes, see ya. Was too hard. Because solo podcasting in particular is very hard. All podcasting is hard. There's pluses and minuses to both, but here's what I think for solo podcasting. This show, 20th Century Boy, to come out every week is like, there's a lot of work that I do. And sometimes I'm so motivated, I'm really keen. Some weeks I'm like, I have nothing to talk about. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't be bothered. I'm too busy. I'm swamped. I don't want to do it. Sometimes that means I don't do it. That's rare. Sometimes I just do it anyway, and maybe you can't tell that I was feeling that way, which is good. That's probably how it should be. But, you know, today actually I woke up, I'm like, oh, I feel like I've got so much and I don't know how I'm going to handle it, and I feel really anxious, right? Those are the struggles. All of the content is generated through me. And for me as an independent podcaster, again, all of that work that I just listed is done by me. I also have producer Pat who helps out. But generally, like, this podcast is self-run. From everything you hear, me planning that, me cutting up audio grabs, you know, everything you hear, like all the little, like, these things, all of that's made by me. All of these, you know, all those openers that you hear if you listen to the show, all of this is made by me. Exporting it. Video, uploading to YouTube, uploading to Spotify, Patreon, all of that stuff. It is all me, and it's all me It all has to be pushed by me. And that's hard. Like, honestly, that's hard. Harry Potter and the Boys, another podcast I do, which I know a lot of you listen to, with Sam Garlip, absolutely amazing comedian. That's hard, but it's easy in other ways. It's easy because when I'm with Sam, I don't worry in the slightest about coming up with content. I just know we're just going to start rolling and just bounce off each other, and I completely trust my on-air relationship with Sam that we're just going to have fun. And that's usually what happens. Like, me and Sam are never like, oh no, what are we going to talk about? Like, I always know it's going to be fun. Harder parts of that, I mean, honestly, I find it easier. I find podcasting with a co-host much easier. You're not carrying the entire weight. Even right now, I can't just stop thinking to think about the next thing to say, which if I was with Sam and he's talking, it gives me time to think about what I want to say and how to respond to him, right? And also, he's so funny, so he makes it really easy to be funny. So that I find hard. But I mean, I love it as an exercise, as an expression of my creativity. I love it. The original idea of doing this podcast was to just like have the conversations I wished I was having about the stuff that no one else cares about. That's literally why I started this podcast. I wanted to be better at speaking. I wanted to be more articulate, and I wanted to be, yeah, better at just speaking by myself, which I think I've gotten better at. But over the years and months and weeks and days, like, sometimes this podcast creatively just becomes this thing in my head that's so hard, right? And I remember when I was working with Will Anderson and he was doing Willosophy, he sort of said similar things. Now, I'm not trying to compare this podcast to Willosophy, but Will would kind of just say, like, you know, sometimes what the podcast became was out of his control. And like, I'm probably misquoting him, but like, it just became hard for him. And I think that's, yeah, I feel similar ways. So solo podcasting is hard. And I think that's why podcasting is already hard enough. So just having one host doing all the work is hard as well. And that's why so many podcasts you see pop up and then disappear, because it's a lot of work that I do pretty much without being paid. You guys fund this show. I mean, if that's a plug for the Patreon, patreon.com/RadioMike, like, to the amazing executive producers and interns on the Patreon, you guys fund the work that goes into this show. So if you like this show, please jump on the Patreon. Think of it as like, you'll pay Netflix $12 or whatever it is, $20 a month to watch their shitty movies and shitty TV shows. If you each week get something out of this, definitely jump on the Patreon and pay my subscription, basically. It's and there's not heaps of money coming in on the Patreon, but to the people who do support, I should say, I don't thank you guys enough. I should try to do it more, and I apologize, but there are people who have been on it since the start who have never dropped off and have been giving like $12 a month, $20 a month. Some of you give $4, some of you give $1 a month. All of it really helps me. Because it just funds, like, I had to buy a bunch of new gear recently because all of my gear is starting to wear because I've had it for 5 years. It's all starting to break. I had to buy a bunch of new stuff. Like, that is what the Patreons fund, because if I don't have gear, I can't do the pod, right? Anyway, it's hard. Bit of a heavy chat about the perils of being an independent podcaster. As far as, are there any podcasts you would like to be a guest on? That's another interesting question that maybe to you guys, I'm using your questions as springboards for me to talk about stuff I want to talk about that isn't like specifically related to your question, because there's probably lots of podcasts I'd love to be a guest on, but it could be like my imposter syndrome and anxiety and stuff. But when I think about, like, I try really hard generally to avoid listening to Australian podcasts. I listen to a lot of American and you know, YouTube shows of people that I don't know and have no connection to, because the thing is, being in the industry I'm in, like, I got into this industry because I loved podcasts and radio and I loved that. Now, and I had no connection to that industry, I just got into it, right? Now this is the industry that I work in, and those shows are like peers of mine, colleagues of mine. They're people that are more successful than me sometimes that make me feel jealous and anxious, like all of these feelings that are really real. And so I guess that's created this aversion to listening to a lot of mainstream Australian stuff. And I listen to a lot of, American like gaming pods that I listened to before I got into this industry, basically just because it feels still very far removed from my life. Like everything in Australia, I have like probably 1 degree of separation from the people doing the show just because I work in the industry. Whereas something like, these gaming channels I follow that do a weekly podcast, like I have just no connection to them. They are not part of my life. They are not causes of stress in my life. And it makes no difference to me if they're successful or not. Like I want them to be successful, but it makes no difference to me, right? So I would love to go on one of these gaming podcasts that I love and chat about video games because I'm a huge nerd and I listen to the podcast and I'm like, I wish I was in this discussion. I'd love to go on them. One that I really like is this channel called Good Vibes Gaming, which is they just talk about gaming and they do a weekly podcast called the GVG Cast. I would love to go on that show someday. Aside from that, like in terms of Aussie stuff again, like, there's so many I'd love to, but I also sometimes feel like I'm not, and again, this is probably not true, but I sometimes feel like I'm not necessarily in like the clique of Aussie podcasters. Like I feel like I'm kind of, there's like this party and everyone's having a good time on the dance floor. And then I'm just sort of like standing by the side doing my own thing. And like I say good day to people, but they're like, oh, hey. And then they go to the dance floor. Whereas I'm not a dance floor kind of guy. Right. And that's probably just, the way I think, but I sometimes, when I think about like getting guests on this show, I'm like, oh, I don't want to ask that person because they might think I'm an idiot or they might think like, oh, I don't want to go on his podcast. And like, again, maybe this is a therapy session podcast for me, but that's just sort of how I feel. And it's weird. And I want to challenge that a bit, but yeah, I there's lots of podcasts I'd love to go on. There's lots of people I'd love to meet and be mates with. Those are my thoughts on that. As far as, are there any episodes of the podcast that I look back on more fondly than others? Not really. I've said before that the first season of this podcast is real. I have really jilted feelings towards. I feel very, I don't like going back to them because it reminds me of like me being a completely different person. The Nug 100 stuff was always very fun where I tried to eat 100 nuggets. I remember that being fun. And maybe, this podcast like has become sort of like a weekly blog and my thoughts week to week on various things. And I like the format that it is. One thing I do like is the Michael Jackson being a pedophile stuff because that is just out of control. Like I talked about that like 3 years ago and I still get hate online almost daily about it across pretty much every platform I'm on, which to me I find very funny. But yeah, those are kind of my loose thoughts on all of that. I'm happy to follow up on some of it, but yeah. Short answer is solo podcasting is really hard and puts a lot of pressure and stress on the host, which is why you should donate to my Patreon, patreon.com/radiomike. Great question. An interesting question came in from Radio Michael Leahy, who sent me a message rather and said, thoughts on the collapse of Australian music festivals. Knotfest is all that's left. Now, of course, recently there has been a huge sort of, cancellation and just disapparation of, dissipate, I don't know. Just lots of festivals have been cancelled and are just disappearing. It's happened like slowly over the past 10 years. I'm going to preface this to all music fans and festival fans by saying that I don't know if I'm the right person to speak about this, but I will give my opinion anyway. And the main reason I think that is because I am pretty, not anti-festival, but I don't enjoy festivals or think that they're good. I don't think that they're a fun experience, in my personal opinion. Here are my thoughts on it. So I remember being at high school and like early days of uni for me. Festivals were really big. You had Soundwave, which was like the punk and metal festival that I went to. That's where I saw, you know, Blink-182 was there. Linkin Park were there, Paramore, Offspring, Sum 41. That was 2013. Amazing. There was Big Day Out, which I never actually went to, but that was like pretty mainstream. You know, you had like The Killers, Red Hot Chili Peppers played there. Like, yeah. Over the years, there's been heaps, you know. Those two were like day summer festivals, but then you had Falls Festival, which was massive. Everyone wanted to go. Beyond the Valley, which I went to once. We'll speak more about it in a sec. There's Laneway. There was Stereosonic, which was like the techno dance music one, which I never went to, obviously. I think the reason I think... I'm not 100% sure of like the economics behind any of this, but personally... Splendor in the Grass recently got cancelled. Personally, I think that Australia, I think, is just really far away from the rest of the world. And I think a lot of big acts don't want to come to Australia to play festivals. A lot of big international acts. I think that might be it. And Soundwave is an interesting case study because they would always have really big international acts. Like, they had Metallica, they had Green Day, they had Linkin Park, they had Blink. All of these, it was predominantly international, I would argue. That's 10 years ago. And there was this big controversy back in the day because the promoter of Soundwave was basically, I think, I don't want to say anything definitively, but there was some kind of scandal involving him. This is all alleged, but he was using the funds from the ticket sales to fund the next year's show. And it was essentially like there was no actual money. There was no profit. He was just using each year's funds to pay the next year's bands. But then like all the money was sort of falling out the bottom. Like the bands wouldn't get paid because he'd already be using the money from ticket sales to pay the next year's bands. And then he'd think there'd be enough money, but there wasn't. And all the international acts were like, we never got paid for Soundwave, you know, all of that. I think that ruined a lot of Australia's reputation for being a good festival location for international acts. And I think a lot of mainstream big acts would rather just do their own shows than festival shows. And I think that is completely reasonable. I think festivals suck, particularly those camping overnight ones at New Year's. I think they're... gross, dirty, everyone's on drugs, you know, and that's not really my scene. It's cool if it is yours. Like, there's always really limited resources, whether it be water, toilets, food is very expensive. They're just often very disorganized. There was an incident at Falls like 7 years ago where people got trampled. Like, just... You know, it's just not, to me, it's just not a good look, and it doesn't make me want to go to them. And I don't want to go to a place like where there's a bunch of like first year uni students doing pingers. And like, you know, I always talk about this time at St. Kilda Festival where San Cisco, who were like a light indie pop rock band from Perth, they were playing and there were like, you know, a group of teenagers doing a mosh pit death circle to like San Cisco's like light indie pop song, Awkward or Fred Astaire or whatever they were playing. And I was just looking at these kids being like, I don't think you understand, like you're not at fucking Megadeth. You're not at like Slipknot. You're at San Cisco, light indie pop band. You don't need to be doing a mosh pit death circle crashing into each other to like shrill high-pitched guitars and dreamy vocals. That's not, I don't think you understand. And I think for me, my experience with festivals has just been that, like, just like all logistical, like what stage do I need to be on at what time, and like it's 15 minutes walk to the toilets, and oh, like, oh, it's raining now. Like, it just, pain in the ass, like wouldn't waste my time on it, wouldn't waste my money. And I think, and just like, you know, the other thing is how expensive life is becoming at the moment, right? Like one like big part of my day-to-day routine is I get a coffee every morning. And now coffee's like $5.50 just for a normal sized coffee. And it's just like life is becoming really expensive. People can't afford to spend like $400 on a festival, 400 plus. And then you add like drinks and, you know, everything else you need to buy there, food. People can't afford that. It's cost of living. It's like the history of Australia and festivals. It's Australia being far away. It's also just like, to me, the reputation of festivals. Like, I think it's just a mix of all of these factors, and people don't want to spend all that money and, you know, like worry about whether they're going to be able to afford it or whether they're going to have money at the time. And the other thing, yeah, like you look at lineups for like Coachella and Glastonbury, and of course, because they're in Europe and the US, the lineups are great. There's some really great acts and those festivals are huge, but I think Australia as a market just doesn't have like, yeah, just doesn't have enough people to warrant those big bands playing the festivals and yeah, being in a festival circuit, because, and then we end up just with like bad lineups, I think, that are like the same bands. Like, nothing against this band, but the band Ballpark Music, which is an Australian indie rock band who are cool, they have a few good songs. Every time I see a festival lineup for like literally any festival, they're on the lineup. I swear to God, like I've seen them so many times at like pretty, I saw them at BTV in 2014. I saw them at New Year's Eve on the Hill. Like all of these bands, they're just the same bands going across every festival. They're all Australian. Like there's no variety. The headliner for Splendor was Kylie Minogue. And I get that it's one of those like almost novelty kind of people, but I'm not about like novelty headliners and stuff like that. And also I think Kylie, like to me, I remember like, you know, she was really big in the 90s when I was like 4 or 5. And I remember hearing her music a lot, but even for me, it's not nostalgic. I feel like it might be nostalgic for people born in the 80s, not for like kids born in the 90s who I think are like the people who want to go to festivals. And I just like, I've always been pretty averse to the like, go to a festival, you know, do a bunch of cocaine or like do a bunch of acid and just go, you know, I've never really been about that. That's not really my thing. So it just, the whole thing to me is just something that I don't like or care about. If I wanted to see a band live a lot, which nowadays, like I've said before, I actually don't love live music. Like I don't love the experience of live music unless I can just sit down the whole time and just watch the band, which to me is a perfectly reasonable thing to want to do as an adult. Blink 182 was probably like the only band that I would stay in line for hours, stand on my feet for hours and just wait there at the front for hours. But like any other band, you know, I'd just rock up and sit down and just watch. I don't need much more than that. I don't want to get, you know, smacked in the face in a mosh pit or anything like that. I don't care about that shit. I just want to hear the music. So yeah, I think those are my thoughts on the festival scene. I'm not big on festivals, so it doesn't really bother me. I appreciate that it's a part of like Australian culture, or it's a, you know, it's really supportive of our music scene, and that's great. But personally, I don't care, which a lot of people will probably hate, you know, me saying I don't give a shit, but I don't really. Next question. Time for Mike to get a bit nerdy, if I had it already. This came in, two questions. One from Dolphin Pants, who sent in a few, but this one's from Big Showy, who said, who is your go-to character in Super Smash Brothers on Switch? And Dolphin Pants said, if you were asked to make the next Super Smash Brothers, how would you follow on from the masterpiece that is Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, which is the current game? Great question. I really want to talk about this. So Super Smash Brothers Ultimate is the Smash Bros. Game on Switch. I haven't actually played it for a while, but like it's probably like nearly 6 years old now. And it was like the best, it's probably my favorite game ever. I've spent thousands of hours playing online. It's a fighting game. I assume most of you are familiar with what it is, but basically, it's, if you watched my hard quiz episode, you know crossover fighting game from Nintendo. It's, you know, you fight as Nintendo characters. There's various third-party characters as well, like Sonic, Pac-Man, Ryu from Street Fighter, Cloud from Final Fantasy. I'm going to like list them off now because I love thinking about it. Sora from Kingdom Hearts. You've got Kazuya from Tekken. You've got Banjo-Kazooie from Banjo-Kazooie. You've got the hero from Dragon Quest. You've got Terry Bogard. You've got, who else is there? Joker from Persona. Like, it was just, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate was just literally the ultimate fighting game roster. It was like every video game fan's dream sort of lineup of characters you could fight against each other. Mega Man, Pac-Man, I already said. Like, all these characters. It was great. And first question, who do I play as? I play as a bunch of characters. The ones I think I'm best at. So the character I've always loved, who was in the original Smash Bros. Game on Nintendo 64, is Ness. Ness is from a game called Mother, which is like was only released in Japan. So like I've never even played the game he's from, but he's not a very like pop. The franchise is very small, but I guess it was big enough at the time. In 1999 that he was included as a character, and he's always been in every game since, and he's basically a boy with psychic powers. He's great. I love playing as him. I also love playing as Jigglypuff, who has been in the game since the first one, who I think a lot of people like laugh at Jigglypuff as a character because it's like Jigglypuff the Pokemon, who's just like this pink marshmallow balloon kind of thing. But I've always loved the way Jigglypuff played. And then there's a character called Pokemon Trainer who basically swaps between three Pokemon, Squirtle, Ivysaur, and Charizard. And I think that's my favorite character in the series because you can just swap Pokemon and like, you know, it's the original three sort of starter Pokemon families, which I love. I love that character so much. And I think it's a great representation of like how Pokemon works. Aside from that, I play a lot of Mario. I play a bit of Banjo-Kazooie. I play Sora from Kingdom Hearts. He was the newest character, the final character added to the game. A bit of Mr. Game & Watch. Who else do I play? Oh man, this is making me want to play it right now, actually. I kind of want to just go play it. It's just over there, but I will keep doing the podcast. Don't say I don't do anything for you. Diddy Kong, I really like playing as. I'm sure there's so many other characters that I love playing as that I'm not really, Pikachu, I quite like, Mewtwo, I quite like, lots of characters that I really like playing. But here's the thing, and it's a great question from Dolphin Pants, because the whole thing with Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is like, this game is so big, and, you know, they do really big events around revealing the characters that are going to be in it, right? That's like the big selling point, and they often go viral, like they make these big CG animated trailers of like characters being revealed to be in the game and people go off. And I used to watch them all live at 2 a.m. in the morning because they were being broadcast on US time. And I would just fucking go nuts. I miss it a lot. And the whole thing with this game was like, it was Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. It was the ultimate version of the game. So what they did is any character that had ever been playable in the games was returned in this, because some characters just got cut between games just for development time or relevance or whatever. So, you know, for example, like Dr. Mario was in Super Smash Bros. The second one, but then he got cut, but then he came back for this one. He's kind of just like Mario. Or a better example is probably Mewtwo, who was in Super Smash Bros. Melee, the second one, then got cut, and then he came back. Right? They brought Snake from Metal Gear. He was in the third one, Super Smash Bros. Brawl, but then for like licensing issues or like something behind the scenes, he got cut from the next one, but they brought him back. The Ice Climbers, they were in a bunch of the games, then they got cut from the fourth game because of technical difficulties, because they're like a two-in-one character and they couldn't get it to run properly or whatever it was. They came back. And the first trailer for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate was called Everyone Is Here, and it just showed all these characters and it was massive. I remember being like, oh my God, I cannot wait to play. It was just insane. Characters that hadn't been playable in like 17 years came back, and it was epic. And then they just added pretty much any character that fans had ever pretty much wanted in the game got added to the game. And it ended up with this roster of like nearly 100 playable characters. It's very balanced. I think it's a very impressive feat in gaming that they were able to pull this off. And they also like obviously like so many negotiations to get a lot of these third-party characters into the game, whether it, you know, whether it's, you know, Cloud and Sephiroth from Final Fantasy or Kazuya from Street Fighter or Mega Man or Pac-Man or Sonic or Snake or Simon Belmont from Castlevania. Like all of these characters, you know, it's hard to get them in the game because they're third party. You have to pay money to license those characters and the music from their games and the assets from their game and everything like that, right? And it was a big feat, and pretty much throughout the whole development and when they were like revealing characters and trailers and stuff, the creator of the game, Masahiro Sakurai, said, this is called Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, and it is unlikely we will ever be able to do something of this scale again. And it's like, it's now gotten so big that if we ever make another game in this series, it'll almost inevitably have to be smaller. Like, it'll have to be different or smaller. We'll have to cut a lot of characters. We'll have to change a lot of it, which is where I think this question is coming from, because a lot of people are like, well, what would you do in the next game? Do you just reboot it? You know, reboot the game, do a completely new thing. Get rid of a bunch of characters, just go back to a base roster and like revamp a lot of the old characters' movesets or whatever it might be, which I think is a viable option. But like, I have two ideas for what I think the next Smash Bros. Game should be. The first one, basically, is I think they should just do Super Smash Bros. Ultimate 2 or like Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Deluxe. Use it, put it on the next Switch console because they're about to put out the Switch 2. Use it, put it on that. And all they have to do, in my opinion, is just put the game out, have like 5 new characters, and then announce that you're doing like DLC for 3 years. So there'll be like 15 more characters added over 3 years and people can buy that. Add a bunch more like single player content or whatever. Basically, what I think Super Smash Bros. Just needs to be is there's just one, they don't need to make a new game from scratch. Just use this game and just keep building on it. Like, as far as I'm concerned, the gameplay is perfect. They don't need to change that or update that. They just need to add more content. They just need to add more playable characters. And like, I'd be more than happy for them to do that. And I would definitely buy it again if there was new content on Switch 2. That's what I think. The other idea I have, which is a bit of a curveball, and I haven't heard many people talking about it, but I think it could work. And because obviously it's like a Nintendo crossover fighter, and like a lot of Mario is probably the most represented franchise. So there's like Mario, Luigi, Peach, Bowser Jr., Wario, Yoshi, Rosalina and Luke. Like there's just Piranha. There's lots of Mario characters. The second most represented, I think, is Pokemon. There's Pikachu, Pichu, Mewtwo, Lucario, Pokemon Trainer, Incineroar, Greninja. Like there's a bunch of Pokemon. I think the next Smash Bros. Game should be a spin-off, and it should just be Pokemon themed, and you just put a bunch of different Pokemon in the game. So a lot of like, you know, Pokemon that would never get into the main game, but like you could put some of the really cool like Gengar, Machamp, like Arbok, all of these Pokemon that like people would really love to play as. I think that would be a great option. It would be it would really refresh the game. It'd be like something completely different. Just Pokemon Smash Bros. That's what I think it should be. So I would do one of those two things. I think inevitably it will be a reboot. It'll just be like a new Super Smash Bros. Game, and they'll just sort of make it a little bit different. That's probably my least favorite option of the three. But it's either that, deluxe version, which I'd love, or a spin-off version, which would be like Pokemon themed. I've seen a few people saying they'd want like it to, because it's like a 2D on a 2D plane. I've seen a few people be like, they should make it 3D. I think that could work as a spin-off, but not as like a main Super Smash Brothers game. So those are my thoughts on that. Thank you for the questions. I've got two more things I want to do on this episode. So let's do one of these bad boys.
Crazy historical facts!
Just a random crazy historical fact. I've actually got two that are semi-related, and one is Japanese-themed, but they are both Titanic-themed. So I just thought both of these were interesting stories, historical stories of Titanic survivors, the first of whom was named Masabumi Hosono. He was a Japanese civil servant who survived the sinking of the Titanic on the 15th of April, 1912. Now, you'd think that would be a good thing, but hear me out. So, just, you know, some people say this segment's just me reading off Wikipedia pages, but I beg to differ. during the night of the 14th to 15th of April, he was awakened by a steward. He was blocked from going to Titanic's boat deck, from which lifeboats were already being launched, as a crewman assumed that he was a third-class passenger. Crazy on the Titanic that, like, it was just like, yeah, first-class passengers can go, third-class passengers, sorry, you've got to die. The rich just always win out. He eventually made his way past the obstruction and made his way to the boat deck, where he saw an alarm that emergency flares were being fired. Hosono saw four lifeboats. This gets good, don't worry. So far, it just sounds like the Titanic movie. Hosono saw four lifeboats being launched and contemplating the prospect of an imminent death. He was deep in desolate thought that he would no more be able to see his wife or children, and there was no alternative for him to share the same destiny as the Titanic. The lifeboats started diminishing rapidly, and he managed to get onto one and was rescued. And he essentially, so he survived the Titanic sinking, and he ended up, you know, going back to Japan, and, you know, it just like started living a normal life. But get this, he was then falsely accused of like forcing his way onto a lifeboat and even disguising himself as a woman, which was apparently not true. And then basically it led to him being, this actually sucks, he was condemned and ostracized by the Japanese government. Hear this. He lost his job and was condemned as a coward by the Japanese press. School textbooks in Japan described him as an example of how to be dishonorable, and he was denounced as immoral by a professor of ethics. He was seen as having failed to show the expected conformity and was believed to have selfishly pushed aside other passengers to board the lifeboat. As a result, he was subjected to muru hachibu, or ostracism. The perception was he had embarrassed children, and Hosono's failure to act as the Anglo-Saxon nations evidently expected their men to act caused embarrassment in Japan, but more because of the Japanese acceptance of Western values than because of their own traditions. Now, this is what's funny. So basically they're saying, oh, like, you didn't conform to what everyone else was doing, which was just drowning and letting everyone else, all the women and children, go. You didn't conform. That's what the Americans do, and you didn't conform. And, like, the Japanese are really big on, like, conforming to, like, the standards, I guess, of other cultures when you're there. And so he brought shame upon Japan for surviving the sinking of the Titanic, and they ostracized him and were like, yeah, you're not allowed to be, like, part of our culture or community anymore. And they're like, you didn't conform. You should have drowned. If you drowned, you would have been a hero. But because you survived, you get ostracized. Imagine that. Imagine being on the Titanic and knowing, imagine if he knew, okay, if I survive, my country is going to ostracize me forever, and I'm not going to be welcome in my country and place of birth where I live. But if I don't survive, then I die and spend the rest of eternity in oblivion far too early. So he's gone, okay, well, I'll survive and I'll just see what happens. And it's led to, like, it probably ruined his life. I can't believe that's insane. That sucks. Imagine having to choose, okay, survive but live a life of ostracism or die. And the expectation from the government is, well, you'd die. In that situation, you would die. You wouldn't survive. You just wouldn't. Hate that. And that made me stumble on another Titanic survivor. Now, this one might be a little bit more interesting. The world of Titanic survivors. Maybe we should do a special on Titanic survivor story. This guy's name is Charles Jokin. You're joking. Was a British-American chef known as being the chief baker aboard the Titanic. He survived the ship's sinking. And now you're never going to believe this. This is what this segment's all about. Just stuff where you're like, I can't believe that. That's absurd. He was on board the ship during its delivery trip from Belfast to Southampton, blah, 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 blah. The ship hit an iceberg. We all know that part. Jokin was off duty and in his bunk at the time. He felt the shock of the collision and immediately got up, and word was being passed down that they've, you know, they've hit. And guess what Jokin did? He basically went to get drunk. While the ship was about to sink, he went and got drunk because, like, he was like, oh, I'll just get drunk, whatever. So he had a bunch of booze. And then essentially he's drunk. He's on the ship. Jokin climbed to the starboard side of the poop deck, getting hold of the safety rail so that he was on the outside of the ship as it went down by the head. As the ship sank, Jokin rode it down as if it were an elevator, not getting his head under the water. He was the last survivor to leave the Titanic, apparently. But how did he survive? How did he survive? Here's what it says. According to his own testimony, Jokin kept paddling and treading water for about 2 hours. Here it is. He also admitted to not being able to feel the cold, most likely thanks to the alcohol he had drank. And then essentially he was found and saved. He was rescued from the sea with only swollen feet. So basically, in a very different story to the last one, this guy's response to the Titanic, knowing that the Titanic was sinking, was, I'm just going to get drunk. Fuck it. Like, whatever, bloody whatever happens. I just want to go out drunk, feeling good. So he goes and gets fucked. Which then he's on the ship while it sinks, riding it down like an elevator. And that is what causes him to... That is ultimately what allows him to survive, because he was so drunk his body couldn't process the cold. So he just survives treading water in pitch black for hours until some boat finds him and picks him up. So I guess if you're ever in an emergency or on a sinking ship, just get drunk. It might very well save your life. The plug. I'm having a lot of fun doing these bulk records, so I hope they're fun to listen to. Harry Potter and the Boys is still rolling out. There should be a movie club coming out at the end of the month if I did my job properly. There's one more of these bulkies and then I'm back live. What else can you do? Like, I'll be posting a bunch of photos on my Insta at Radio Mike of my trip. So I hope you can go and follow me there and like some of them. And, you know, there's still content rolling out on TikTok and the rest. I think that's pretty much it. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope you're enjoying these bulkies. Feel free to send in questions. I love doing Q&A anytime. So if you have anything you want to know, feel free to write it in. I'm going to go. Enjoy wherever you are. I'll enjoy wherever I am. And I will say, well, today I'm at Universal Studios Osaka, which is amazing. Go check out photos on my Insta probably now. Thank you so much for listening. My name's Radio Mike. This has been The Inside of My Mind. I will see you very soon. Goodbye. I'm